Welcome, thank you for coming. My name is Russ Walsh, and I feel like I'm on the top of the pitcher's mound before they lowered it after Gibson's 1968 season. They're looking down on you here. This presentation is a summary of the research that I did into the Klein Chocolate baseball team, the semi-professional team from 1919, and I hope at some point this research will, it's in the process now with the Sabre Research Journal, so maybe you'll see the whole thing at some future point. Like many companies in the early 20th century, the Klein Chocolate Company of Elizabethtown, Pennsylvania, had a baseball team, and they had a and they played against other companies and other town teams in the area, semi-professional teams, and it was more or less a way to a recreation for the employees and an opportunity for the townsfolk to come out and watch a game. But the proprietor of the Klein Chocolate Company, and by the way, the Klein Chocolate Company was well known for their lunch bar. Okay, the lunch bar was a 3-cent candy bar, and of course in those days you could get your, with a nickel you could get a lunch bar and two pieces of penny candy at the store. So that was their famous product. So William Klein was the proprietor of the Klein Chocolate Company. William Klein and his brother Frederick started their careers in chocolate with the Hershey Company. So this all started, they started with Hershey in Lancaster. When Hershey moved to what became Hershey, they went with him and were really his right-hand men, if you will, at the Hershey Company. And then they decided to strike out on their own, and they built their own factory in Elizabethtown, Pennsylvania. So all of this is happening within about a 20-mile radius of from Elizabethtown, north to Hershey, 10 miles south to Lancaster. All of that is where this is taking place, and that becomes important for what happens in just a minute. So, while with Hershey, William, who was a baseball fanatic, convinced Milton Hershey that the company needed to have a baseball team. And he became the manager. That's him in the boater there on the right, on the far right, and he was the manager of the team, and his brother Frederick played the infield. Frederick is the third in from the right there, with his hand on his hip. He played infield for the team. So they took this experience with the Hershey team, and of course when they opened their own factory in Elizabethtown, at first they opened it in a little storefront, but eventually they were successful enough that they built this factory, which still stands in Elizabethtown today, although now it's run by M&M Mars, and they make Dove chocolates there now, and it still smells good. I've been there. So anyway, Klein started to make, he really was able to build this factory based on the fact that he talked the U.S. Army into putting lunch bars into the rations for the World War I soldiers. So he, the company was a going concern based on all of these chocolate bars being in the soldiers' ration boxes. So when the soldiers came back, the Klein bar was a familiar brand to them. But he wanted to expand. His brand was regional. Hershey was pretty much knocking his brains out because being the bigger brand and so forth. So he wanted to expand. He tried advertising in newspapers. He found that was of limited success. So he decided to take his passion for baseball and turn that into an advertising campaign. So what he did, and another thing that's really important here to understand is that the Pennsylvania Railroad, the main road east to west for all of the Major League Baseball teams at the time, okay, went right through Elizabethtown, Pennsylvania. I mean, directly through. And so what he did was he said, what I'm going to do is I'm going to build the best company baseball team in the country, and I'm going to invite Major League Baseball teams to come here and play my team. The newspapers will cover it. I'll get lots of free publicity. There'll be lunch bars in every lunchbox in the country. So How did he do it? Well, first of all, he wrote to every major league team and invited them to stop in Elizabethtown and play his team. And he got some positive response. And then he said, well, I need to build a team. So he hired former major leaguer John Brackenridge. Brackenridge played briefly for the Phillies in 1904. He was a resident of Harrisburg and had played many years in the Pacific Coast League and had was retired and now had developed a reputation as a fine coach in the Harrisburg area. So he hired Brackenridge and said, money's no object. Hire the best players you can find in the area. I'll give them a job in the winter. They play baseball all summer. Now, in those days, for any baseball player, having a job guaranteed in the winter was very significant. So this attracted a lot of good players, as we'll see. And while Brackenridge was collecting players, Klein built a stadium right there in Elizabethtown on the Klein Chocolate Athletic Field. And there's a picture of the grandstand. It had no fence, no boundary of the fence, except for Quinoy Creek, which was a tributary of the Susquehanna River. So the creek formed the outer boundary of the field, as you can see in this illustration, or sort of see, okay, where it's situated. Directly behind the grandstand that you see drawn there is the Elizabethtown, what was at that time the Elizabethtown High School. And this is just a shot that I took myself from the original home plate of that field. And what you see in the distance there, of course, is if you were standing at a home plate there, you could take aim at the factory, at the chocolate factory right there in the background. I don't know that anybody hit one that far, but there it is. And you can see there's a youth field, actually several youth fields there now. My grandson plays on that field that you're seeing there in that picture now. So, Brackenridge got the players together, and they actually played a game before the May 30th, but they had an opening day doubleheader on May 30th, 1919. The Klein team played that day against the best team, the best other industrial team in the area. It was the Motive Power team, which was the powerhouse that was the Pennsylvania Railroad team. And the Klein team beat them in this doubleheader 15-3 and 13-0. So it became clear right away that this was a team unlike any other in the area. Their shortstop, Glenn Killinger, hit a home run, and their slugging first baseman, Tony Walsh, hit two home runs. And as a celebration after the two games, William Klein came out and presented each of them with a box of Klein chocolates. And that became the tradition. If you hit a home run at a home game for the Klein chocolate team, you got a box of chocolates to take home with you. Okay, so here's... on the left there, Glenn Killinger, fascinating guy. Killinger only played for about a month or two with the Klein team and then went back to Penn State where he was a major football star. After graduating from Penn State, he became one of the most famous coaches in Pennsylvania at Westchester University. He was still the athletic director at Westchester University when my brother went to play football at Westchester in the 1970s. So a really historic figure in Pennsylvania sport. In the middle is Babe Brown, who left the team also after a couple months to play with other semi-pro teams in the area. And then on the right is Russ Wrightstone. Russ Wrightstone, probably the most successful player. He was the leading hitter on the team, and he became... He went right from the Kleins in 1919 to the Philadelphia Phillies, and he had a 9-year major league career. I'll talk a little bit more about him in a minute. Other players, George Hunter had spent one season with the Brooklyn Superbas, who later became the Dodgers, and was the center fielder for the team. Dick Kaufman was became the first baseman for the team. He had played 2 years with the St. Louis Browns. Frank Brannon replaced Killinger at shortstop. Brannon had a long minor league career. Bill Kay was 41 years old when he came to play right field for the Klein Chocolate team. He had spent some time with the Washington Senators, as you can see from his uniform. And Hank Ritter had spent parts of 4 years with the New York Giants as a pitcher, and he joined the Klein squad as well as many many others. Their catcher was a longtime minor league team. Thank you, player Bugs Trout, and I mentioned Tony Walsh, another longtime minor league player. So here's the train station. Still standing today. That's where the players would get off from the major league teams that came to visit, and they would walk across the street literally to play the games. The station has been rebuilt, but that they have left that there. Here's the record. They won more than 80% of their games, as you can see. They played several major league games, major league teams. They had a winning record, 7-4 record against major league teams that came through. Their nemesis were the Atlantic City Bacharach Giants, a Negro independent team. This was before the Negro Leagues were formed, and particularly the pitcher Dick Redding, who pitched Dick Cannonball Redding, who should be in the Hall of Fame and was just denied again. Dick Cannonball Redding shut them out once, held them to one run one other time. Connie Mack brought his A's team there twice. He played his, for the most part, his regulars, and he lost to the Kleins twice. Rogers Hornsby came with Branch Rickey and the St. Louis Cardinals. They jumped out to a 5-0 lead on the they called them the Lunch Bars. That was their nickname, the Klein Lunch Bars. 5-0 lead when Wrightstone made an error in the first inning, but the Kleins came all the way back and beat the Cardinals 6-5. There's Dick Redding I just mentioned, and the other pitcher was Frank Wickwire. Okay, I hear recognition out there. Was the other pitcher from the Bacharach Giants who defeated the Klein team. The fans were really thrilled when local hero Jake Daubert came back to play with the Reds, and the Kleins actually lost to the Reds 4-3. Rube Bressler was the pitcher. Of course, the Dodgers also came to town. They lost to the Reds once, but they also beat them once 2-1. They also did lose once to Brooklyn and beat the Dodgers once also. Walter Johnson. By the way, one thing I should say is the Kleins, when these teams came, they were attracting crowds of 4,000 to 6,000. One game against the Senators attracted 10,000 when they were honoring World War I soldiers who had returned from war. So many people, and this it was too big for the Elizabethtown Stadium. They moved it to Harrisburg, to Island Field, if you know where that is. Some of you might. And it was so crowded at Island Field that they had to have special ground rules because every pop-up basically went into the crowd in left field, and it became a double. But anyway, Walter Johnson came, pitched, and lost to the Lunch Bars 4-3 in 12 innings. Johnson did not pitch the whole game. Washington only brought 9 players, and center fielder Sam Rice ended up taking the loss as the pitcher in the 12th inning. And this guy came. Babe Ruth also came and played. Babe Ruth played left field for Boston and pitched the last 3 innings. In those last 3 innings, he lost a 3-0 lead that Boston had built up, and they lost to the Lunch Bars 4-3. Babe gave up 3 of those runs, one of them on a triple by the aforementioned Russ Wrightstone. The team did lose twice to John McGraw and the Giants for their 7-4 record. So at the end of the season, Russ Wrightstone was the leading hitter. And as I mentioned to you before, was immediately picked up. There were scouts there all the time. Connie Mack was talking about some of the players on the team when he got back to Philadelphia. The Phillies signed Wrightstone straight off of the Elizabethtown field, and he had a nine-year career there. He was a utility player, played mostly third base, but moved around the infield. His defense was shaky, but he could hit. And he ended up with a .297 lifetime batting average for the Phillies as a sometime full-time, sometime part-time player, but moving all around the infield and the outfield. He once dropped a fly ball that cost the Phillies a game, and he just said it was too damn high. So, you know, there you go. But he could hit, and I had the opportunity to write the Sabre biography for Russ Wrightstone, so very interesting guy. Very interesting experience he had. Art Decatur, who came on and pitched for the team after he was finished with his minor league season, and he wore my hat at the time. So Art had a 23-34 record in six major league seasons after his time with the Lunch Bars. Norman Plitt, also a pitcher, had a 3-6 record in three seasons with the Dodgers and Giants. This is at the Elizabethtown Historical Society, where they continue a display about the Klein team and an exhibit, and where I did much of the research for this. But unfortunately, this good story could not last. The major league teams raided the team. Many of the players signed with minor league teams, or in Russ Wrightstone's case, went directly to the major leagues. And the following year, Klein had promised the folks of Elizabethtown that he would field a similar team. They tried, they couldn't win, and eventually in June of 1920, the team, as we've been talking about, was disbanded. They did come back and continue to have a factory company team, but it was nowhere at the level of this. The one remarkable thing that happened as they continued on, in 1931, the House of David came to play against the Elizabethtown, the chocolate company team, and they brought with them a ringer as the pitcher, one Grover Cleveland Alexander. So Pete Alexander attracted some fans on that day to the field. And that's a very quick overview of this story. That's my website there, Faith of a Phillies Fan. If you're a Phillies fan, you know why it says Faith of a Phillies Fan. That's the only way you can survive. But if you go to my website, you can find a link to this article, which hopefully in another form will appear in the Sabre Journal. And you can email me there if you'd like, and I'd like to entertain questions.
What happens to the Klein Chocolate Company?
The Klein Chocolate Company was sold to M&M Mars. It is still there. It is still employing 300 people in Elizabethtown, Pennsylvania, and they're making Dove bars, Dove chocolates, right? Yeah. So they're still there.
Yeah. Were there any barnstorming teams that came through?
Well, I would, yes. Particularly the Bacharach Giants, the Atlantic City Bacharach Giants. They were basically a barnstorming team at that time. The Lunch Bars did go to Atlantic City to play them, but there was no Negro League at the time, so they were really an independent team that was barnstorming. But they played, Bethlehem Steel had a terrific team. Bethlehem Steel actually beat them one time. They beat Bethlehem Steel a couple times too, but Bethlehem Steel beat them. Stan Baumgartner, a left-hander who pitched for the Phillies and A's later on, actually shut them out 1-0. Yes.
How early in your life did you find out about this team?
What time is it? So a couple of things happened.
19 p.m.
Thank you. The let's see if I talk to you again. The my son finished a degree at Indiana University, and he and his wife got jobs in Elizabethtown, Pennsylvania, at the college there, and he moved there, and I went there, and at the same time, I was doing research on the biography for Russ Wrightstone. And so those two things kind of, I said,
How convenient.
And literally standing on the field watching my grandson play baseball, I said, that's it. You know, and putting those two things together, and I said, well, I need to do more research about this. I need to find out about this. And it's, you know, this one amazing, amazing year. And, you know, the coda on all this is, of course, that the advertising that he saw really happened. I mean, they had Babe Ruth there. When Babe Ruth played there and they beat Babe Ruth, it was national news. It was in newspapers all over the place. There was no dearth of information. You know, I put together the statistics based on newspaper reports. There's no retro sheet for this, but you know, they were really well covered in the news, and this was all free publicity and sustained the company for 50 more years. Yes, sir.
Yeah, when Brackenridge got the assignment to put together this team, what were his strategies to try to find the talent?
Well, he knew the players. Okay, he knew he had been coaching in the area. Okay, so he knew who was out there, and he knew he had the best deal going. Okay, he had the money. Okay, he could offer them a job and the money, and they didn't have to take the job. But not all of them stayed and worked for the company, but. He had been coaching in the area and knew the players. Almost all of these guys, if you look at their history, if I had more time, I'd go into it, but they were college players from local schools, Juniata, Lebanon Valley, Susquehanna, Shippensburg. So he was getting them from the colleges and then from the other industrial teams around, or town teams around, and he just cherry-picked. And then also he had a relationship with the New York Pennsylvania State League, and you know, this he could pay them more than these minor league teams could, and that's the other way he got them. So a lot of guys came from the New York Pennsylvania State League too. So he was the right guy because he knew the talent and knew the players. So that's how he went about it. He could cherry-pick them because he could pay more. Yeah.
The boundary around the outfield,
yes.
Is it a creek, a river?
Conoy Creek, it's called, Conoy Creek.
Yeah, how did they keep people from just kind of fording the creek to watch, right?
I don't think they cared that much about that, yeah. I don't know, I don't even know how much, I don't have anything on what they charged. I think you just came and you watched the game.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. They did. Well, I mean, I don't have any reports that the crowds were in the outfield at Elizabethtown, but in Harrisburg, you know, these 6,000, 8,000, 10,000 people crowds, they were literally had to rope off the outfield for and make up new ground rules for people being out there. They were attracting 6,000, 8,000, and 10,000 people for these games.
So all the major league teams they played in City.
Not all of them. Most of them. There were one or two that definitely played right at Elizabethtown, and just you know, but yeah. But I mean, when you see that record, most of that, of course, was built up against other industrial teams or other town teams. Yeah.
An example.
You know what? If I was really smart, I would have had. I would add, although, you know, I'll tell you this, this is the truth, and this is sad, maybe a little bit. I can remember getting Klein lunch bars in my Halloween basket when I was a kid.
Right?
I'm from Philadelphia, but so, you know, it would make sense that they're around there, yeah.
Hey, Russ, is there any empirical data to show that the team and all the publicity surrounding it actually increased sales of the Klein lunch bars?
Well, yes, in the sense that you could now buy the Klein lunch bar from St. Louis to Boston at that time. I mean, eventually it shrunk some, okay? But the idea was to make it go national. And, you know, basically as far as the railroad went with baseball teams, the Klein lunch bar went too for a time, yeah. But, I, you know... As far as a real analysis of that, no. I don't have any actual statistical analysis of that. But I do know that the company was successful in their marketing. Yeah.
Is there a plaque anywhere in town for the field or anything?
Yes. I believe there is a... Yes, there's a marker near where I showed that picture. There's a marker there that talks about the little bit of the history of the Klein Chocolate Company field. And of course, then there's the little shrine there in the Historical Society.
Okay, well,
thank you very much.
Thanks. Excellent job.